Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, and welcome to the We Are Women podcast. I am your host, Janine Vosper, and today I have Mel Kettle. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Mel. Mel is a food-loving, book-reading beachgoer who lives on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and she is a trusted mentor to executives and leaders and highly sought-after speaker and trainer on leadership communication and how to set healthy boundaries. I'm really looking forward to our conversation about that, Mel. I think that out of anything, when I'm working with, particularly with women, it's how to do that. So Mel was twice, in 2022 and 2023, was recognised by Leaders Hum. Is it Hum? H-U-M? Yes. Does it stand for something in particular?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. As one of the top 200 biggest voices in leadership. Now, she is an author of two books, the best-selling Fully Connected and The Social Association. And I know Mel loves her work, her husband, and her life in general. We've known each other on and off for quite a lot of years, but it's so great that you are on here with me today, Mel. I'm looking forward to really learning more about what you know. I think that's the simplest way to put it, and how you assist people achieve the results that they do in those leadership roles. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Janine. I was trying to remember when we did actually meet and how long ago that was, and it all got a bit too hard. So yeah. I can't remember, but I know it's been a very long time.
It was, yes. And I think we measure everything by 2020, and it was way before that. So
yeah, it was way before that. Yeah.
Now, I do detect an accent though, Mel. So you haven't always been in Australia.
Oh, no, I lived in Canada until I was seven, and I lived in Canada on and off for a few years in my 20s. And my father was English, and I've travelled a lot, so yeah. I pick up twangs easily.
Interesting. And I know you, when we were chatting before, you said that you've just been to New Zealand as well. I think you may have picked up a little bit of the...
Maybe.
Kiwi. Yeah, maybe. Also. Maybe. Yeah. I just have an ear, but it was a bit of a mix, and I was trying to figure out what it was. So tell me more about you and what you do.
So I work with leaders and teams to help them communicate to create real connection and sustained engagement. And an enormous amount of that work looks at self-leadership and how do you lead yourself first so that you can better lead others. Because we all know what it's like to try to have a conversation with compassion and be clear about what we're saying when we haven't had enough sleep or we're cranky or we're hungry or hangry.
Oh, I know that. I know that word.
And the way that I work is through my Connected Leaders program, which is a 12-week in-house program for leaders or groups, for teams or groups of leaders, and my online Thriving Leaders program, which is for individuals. And I also facilitate strategy sessions and speak at conferences and do one-off masterclasses and lots of fun things.
Excellent. How did you get into that field of leadership? Because, look, to be honest, there's a lot of people out there that say they're leadership coaches. And I don't, you know, I'm looking at their history and I'm thinking, is it experienced or is it book, you know, either way, but where does it come from for you?
So my background is marketing communication and I've worked in that field for a very long time. And I think I've been consulting for 17 years and I morphed from operational marketing comms work to strategic comms work to working with a lot of communications teams and boards and senior exec teams of small to mid-sized organizations. And the thing that I discovered and realized that they all had in common is that they were all operating suboptimally because they were mostly exhausted, overworked, overstretched. And so I took a lot of my leadership experience from my roles in government and in the corporate sector and thought, what can we do better? How can we make their lives easier? And it's not so much what can the organization do to make their lives easier, but what can they do themselves to start prioritizing themselves and recognizing that they do need to take the time to work out what they need to be doing to focus their time, energy, and attention on the things that really matter.
Oh, that's such an important factor. And I know when we before we came on, we were talking about planning our holidays before we plan anything else for the year. Yeah. And that's one of the things, isn't it, to do things that matter. That's a big scope, isn't it?
It really is.
It's and finding people to really how they can understand that, because I know I've worked in in senior management myself, and when you're in that space and there's a whole lot of work that needs to get done, I know for me, because I've dealt with this. I used to be very much a control freak. I won't use the word freak, but a control in my own world. It's just easier if I get it done myself. So you probably come across that a lot. But that's one of the loads that people put on themselves, isn't it? And then it's whether the work doesn't get it done as well, or I know I didn't give my attention to my staff as well as I should have because I'm just too busy to be doing that. And stepping out of that role and looking back at it now, I'm thinking, gee, I could have done that a lot better.
Yeah, I look at my first leadership role. I was 29. I was working for a global marketing agency and I was heading up a team of six, and we were running all of the events in Australia for Microsoft. We were consulting to Microsoft to run their events.
Wow. Okay.
And in 1 year, we did 300 events. So it was...
It's only 365 days a year.
Yep. That's exactly right. So the person that negotiated the contract for my firm did a great job for Microsoft and a crappy job for us. because she'd never run an event before. She was a sales manager. So she did she negotiated a good deal on some levels, except that she didn't recognize how long it took to take an event, to run an event, because if you've never had to organize one, good event managers make it look really easy. And so it was really stressful. There was a lot of expectation on me to do the work as well as to manage the team. And so just what you said, my attention was very inward. I was struggling to keep my head above water. I was working 70 to 80 hours a week, traveling a fair bit, and driving a lot in Sydney from my house to my office to the Microsoft offices. And I was exhausted. So by the end of a year, I was majorly in burnout. And I look back at that time now and think, God, how did anybody ever even talk to me or want to be around me? Because I was such an awful person, because I was so stressed and so overworked and so focused on just getting that next event out on time and, hopefully on budget, so that we not get in trouble.
Yeah. And it's hard to realize when you're in the space, isn't it?
It wasn't until I stepped out of the space and that I realized the toll physically and emotionally and mentally that it was taking on me. I actually realized when I went to see the doctor. I was 29. I had I don't even know what I went to see him for, something that had nothing to do with stress. And he said to me, "We'll just take your blood pressure." And he took it and he said to me, "I don't know how you're walking around. I've never seen anybody your age with blood pressure that high.
Wow.
If you don't make some major life changes, you're on the fast track to having a stroke by the time you turn 30.
Wow.
And my 30th birthday was 3 months away. And so I, didn't even have time to think about that because we had a big event that was starting the next week. But I eventually, a couple of months later, about a month before my 30th, went back to work after Christmas. My boss said to me, "How was your break?" And the first words out of my mouth were, "I quit." And I had no idea I was going to say that, but I did. And he said, "Do you mean it?" And I said, "Well, I suppose I do, because I said it. So yes."
There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from there, when you stepped into government then, that was
an, yeah, so from then I
did
left.
You know better then is the
well
question.
I left, that was in Sydney, so I left Sydney probably about 3 or 4 days after resigning. I realized that not only did I not love my job, there wasn't very much about my life in Sydney that I loved. I didn't really have a good circle of friends because I worked all the time, so it was hard to meet people. I was spending, like, I was paying so much money on just living, and even in the late 90s, Sydney was expensive, and I wasn't earning a huge amount because you don't when you organise events. And so I decided that I had to leave Sydney, and I looked around and thought, where will I go? I thought about going back to Canada, but I didn't want to do that. I thought about moving to back to Canberra, where I'd gone to uni. I thought about going to Melbourne, to Adelaide, and I eventually settled on Brisbane. So March 2000, I packed up my car and moved to sunny Queensland, and I've never looked back. It was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah.
We complain about our traffic here and we complain about that, but
please,
nothing. Not at
Although
all.
Now I live in Caloundra, I do complain about Brisbane traffic.
Yeah. I get that. We were up in the van, Caloundra, Golden Beach the other day.
Oh, nice.
Weekends ago.
Nice.
Beautiful
time.
Spot.
Yeah,
it's a very nice lifestyle. So you've created a lifestyle for yourself.
Yeah, we have. And one of the things, and you mentioned, did I go to the public sector? My first job when I got to Brisbane was marketing manager of the Brisbane Festival, which was one of the best jobs I've ever had, if not the best job I've ever had. That was a contract for 9 months to see out the festival. And then I got a job in government. And people say to me, why on earth are you going to work for the Queensland government? And my immediate response was, because I'd like a job with flexi time. I don't want to work 80 hours a week anymore. I would like to be able to have a day off and get paid for it every now and then. And I would like something that's a bit cruisier than what I was doing. And I had some amazing jobs when I was in government. None of them were particularly cruisy or easy.
Yeah.
But I did get, like, I definitely never got back to that 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
Not even when I left as a senior exec.
And then you do the smart thing about stepping your own business, where, you know, the lowest paid people in Australia are people that own their own businesses and work the longest hours, but it's a different,
but you know, I started my business because I wanted to choose the work I did with the people I did and have more flexibility and have more than 4 weeks holidays a year. So you know, most weeks I have 8 to 12 weeks holiday.
I'm absolutely with you. And as before we came on, I mentioned that I'd already planned out all my holiday breaks for next year and booked an overseas trip and booked the trips around Australia. And because that is such an important thing. And it sounds like the holidays for you are very high on your value system as well.
Oh, they are.
Holidays aren't necessarily high on everyone's value system, but finding what is and how to have that time, you know, might be just 100% with family or whatever that looks like. That's the priority, isn't it? Recognizing. What's important?
Exactly. And you asked about some of the work I do. A lot of the work I do is around helping people identify what their core values and their priorities are and what do they need to do. How do they need to make changes, or do they need to make changes? Do they need to put healthy boundaries in place to make sure that they actually get time to do the things that are the priorities, whether it's, you know, spending time with their kids or their partner or their friends or looking after their health or, you know, having financial security, whatever it might be? What is it that you need to be doing in order to ensure that those values are met and your priorities are focused on?
Yeah. And then you've got a lot more, when you do that, a lot more focus. You have got more energy to working towards those goals because they're things that are so important for you as well.
And you're happier. You're so much happier. And the research shows when you're happy, you're much more likely to achieve more work.
Yeah. It's a bit of a catch-22 the other way around, isn't it? Which we don't notice when we're in that. I know my husband had a really stressful job he did not like and ended up having a heart attack with it. But he's fine. But it's he never recognized there was a correlation between stress and health. Just did not believe that at all. But he would go on holidays, and he would take a week to decompress. And then as the holidays started to end, it would be 3 days of anxiety again and stress before he even went back into that workplace.
Yeah.
And I know he's not alone. I know that a lot of people do that, particularly when the job is not meeting the values and it's something that is just something that they don't like to be doing.
Mm. One of my signals is about stress at work is when I have 3 sleepless nights because of worrying about a client or a piece of work I'm doing, or when I was an employee worrying about my job. And you can, you know, one sleepless night every now and then because of worry, that's par for the course as far as I'm concerned, especially if you care about the work you do. 2 sleepless nights in a row, that's a bit of a red flag. 3, for me, that's the sign of that something's fundamentally wrong. And if I can't address it and change it, then it's time to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And
that's a good measure.
Yeah, everyone has their own. Like I in the book I talk about feathers, bricks and trucks, and they're feathers for me. And everyone has their own feathers that are those little tickly gut spidey senses on the back of your neck, warning signs that are telling you some things are not quite right. Mm. It's when you don't listen to it that you are more likely to get the brick in the truck that can lay you flat for a while. And husband, it sounds like he had plenty of feathers and probably a few bricks. And then the truck was the heart attack.
Absolutely. And it was, you know, a huge wake-up call. And that led to, because he was with government for 30, 40 years or something, so he had 12 months off fully paid afterwards and realised the difference in him. It took him months, though, just to.
Yeah.
And I'm using the word decompress again because they're basically what it was when you're under that heightened stress levels all the time. So, and yes, that I love that feathers, brick and bus. And a friend of mine was having other issues and trying to help, but, you know, and if it's unsolicited, it's often not, it's not adhered to or listened. But eventually he literally had a truck.
Yeah, and you need to, like, it's really easy to see where other people might need support, and it's really easy to see yourself with the clarity of hindsight. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you as an individual don't want to change your situation, then nothing else is going to make you until you come to that realization yourself. And, you know, it was the same with my husband. He was a management accountant and a project accountant and worked for some organizations that wanted him to do really dodgy things with their money. And probably his 2 highest values are he's got a very high ethics system, but he's also a people pleaser. And so they clashed a lot. And the ethics won out over the people pleasing, thank God, because otherwise, you know, he could be in prison right now. But he eventually decided that he didn't want to be an accountant anymore. And he took a break and worked at Coles delivering groceries for 6 months and then got another job as a CFO of a mid-sized firm, of a mid-sized business in Brisbane, and did that for about 9 months and then just went, you know what, no, it's not what I want. And he went back to Coles, and he's now been working at Coles for about 5 or 6 years, and he loves it. He's really happy. We had to make some major changes in our, you know, finances and our spending habits and, you know, cut a few things out. But also, you know, because I work for myself, it was easier for me to supplement some of the income that we lost from him with my business. Mm. But we just sat down and worked out how much money do we really need? Like, realistically, what do we need to bring in? And we did a budget and we worked it out, and we've worked out that it was worth it because he's happy now and he's healthy and his mental health is really good compared to what it was for a long time. And his physical health is really good because he's not stressed. And, you know, he'll go to the doctor and have his blood pressure taken and it will be really, like, normal.
Yeah.
Whereas it never used to be.
And, look, both of those stories of our men are very good examples of what can be happening in people in those leadership roles. I'm glad he's all, you know, healthy and well. And again, doing something that is – you just enjoy doing is a big point, isn't it? Look, and you get to a stage in your life where you can have really pushed through a whole lot of things, but you get to a stage just go, and again, I don't need a new phone every 2 years. I don't need, you know, that furniture or the clothes. You're just figuring out what makes you, again, what's those values and what's important to you. And you can't get your health back. That's one of my biggest things, is you cannot get your health back.
Exactly. And, you know, what's that expression? Health is wealth.
Yeah.
It really, really is. And, you know, we've had friends who've died way too young. All of our parents died. Three of our four parents died way too young through very freaky, unexpected things. And ironically, when we met and we were having the parent conversation, the parent that we thought would die first, because he's the one that had had heart bypass surgery at the age of 55 and again at 70, he lived the longest of all of them by 10 years at least. Wow.
Yeah. And again, you never know. I know my dad was the one that my kids used to call, well, his grandchildren used to call him the freak of nature, because he treated himself so badly, and he was the one that lived the longest. Yes, go figure. Yeah.
One of the reasons I reckon Gordon lived as long as he did is because he, you know, Sean's mum died a long time ago, and he remarried when he was 75, and they had seven very happy years together before he died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
But he was happy.
Yeah.
And I think if he hadn't remarried, I highly doubt he would have lived that many more years.
Yeah.
He was genuinely happy, and you could just see his joy radiating out of him when you spoke to him and saw him.
That's lovely. Yeah.
And there's so much to say for that. Yeah.
Does make a difference. And I, we're getting off track here, but I have to make a comment. I read a book many years ago called Dead Doctors Don't Lie, and they did a research on 1,000 centenarians in the US and found out the two things that they had in common. And one was they ate meat every day. That was one thing, in all different areas. The second thing was the purpose, having a purpose.
Yeah. I'm watching the show on Netflix, what's it called?
Not the Blue Zones.
The Blue Zone one. Yes, thank you.
I started watching that as well.
And I've only seen one episode, but I've been reading about it, and it's so interesting because they all have similarities. And the thing that has kept all of them alive as long is the social connection.
Yes.
And the conversations they have and the purpose that this social connection gives them every day. Mm-hmm. And there's so much we can learn from that, particularly for those of us who just spend so much time glued to a screen or staring at our phone in isolation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, texting people rather than picking up the phone and having a conversation. And the more we can bring real connection back into our lives, then the better off we'll be in the short term and in the long term.
Most definitely. I network a lot, and people say to me this, how do you get your work done? You're out networking a lot. And there's a few reasons for that. One, that's where my clients are, or prospective clients, and that is face-to-face. I find I have a lot more success in having conversations, exactly what you're saying, with people than putting anything on social media marketing or sitting behind a screen. But the other part of it is I'm an extrovert and I'm outgoing. And for me to turn up into at least two networking events a week, four or five is five's getting a bit many, but I've got to be out there with people. It feeds my soul. I know I have to do it. And I make sure that I do it. And that's part of anything in the leadership role, isn't it? Finding what feeds your soul.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel that sometimes we forget to take the time to do the things that feed our soul, particularly when we have big jobs, big commitments, big responsibilities. And particularly, you know, for those of us who are Gen X women in particular, we've got children, we've got parents we're looking after quite often, in-laws we often have to have responsibilities for. And so how do we find time for ourselves?
Mm.
The only way you can do that is by making the time for yourself.
And that middle generation, I know I've moved through that now. And it's funny when you get to 60-something and you think, oh, I'm an orphan. You know, it's quite a different space when you realize you miss your parents, but you don't miss the responsibility of that part of it. And yes, it is difficult because usually, as you said, Gen X are the ones that busy, busy lifestyles with children, but also the commitment and responsibility with the other generations. So, and we got to turn up and be a top executive at work and be committed or demonstrate our commitment, especially if they're in a role that's, you know, one of the professional roles where it's very different from men in the workplaces. That's quite a traditional male space. Yep. But the women have got to prove a lot more, haven't they?
And then let's add menopause and perimenopause into the mix as well, just for fun.
I'm not in a bad mood, really.
I know. I was really cranky last night and I said to Sean, you know, it's not hormones, you know, it's you, because I've been postmenopausal for a few years now. And he's like, God damn it, I can't blame your hormones anymore when you yell at me.
Yes, if you haven't been there yet, wait for it. But part of, you know, all of that, when you've got all of these loads on top of you, and you mentioned the word earlier, and it's something that I mentioned in the intro, is boundaries, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do we set boundaries?
Yeah. Setting boundaries, the first thing you need to figure out is, what are your priorities? What do you want to be doing? How do you want to feel? What do you want to do? How do you want to spend your time? And forget about what you want other people to think of you, but what do you want to think of yourself? And then once you've worked out what your core priorities are, then work out what does that look like for you? So one of my core priorities for the last few years has been sleep, getting enough sleep. And it was probably about 4 years ago where I realized that 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night wasn't going to cut it. And if I wanted to feel better generally and, you know, in every way, then I needed to be getting 7 to 8 hours sleep a night, which meant I couldn't go to bed at midnight and get up at six. Mm. I had to be going to bed quite a bit earlier, and recognizing that hours in bed don't always or usually don't equate to hours actually asleep. And that quality of sleep is very different to quantity of sleep. So I bought an Oura ring and I just started focusing on, what do I need to do to get to bed earlier? What time do I need to have dinner? How many nights a week can I be going out? How many, you know, how much alcohol should I be drinking at night? What's the impact of that? And I did lots of little experiments and I made lots of changes, and it was really hard, but because I was really keen to create better sleep habits, I set a lot of boundaries, and I put boundaries around things like when I would be using technology, like watching Netflix or doing emails or on my computer at work. And even things like now, I get a lot of requests to record podcasts at night, and 99% of the time I say no. If it's after 7 o'clock, after a 7 o'clock finish, there's just no way, because then I'll be eating dinner too late, which will impact on my sleep. And so I also put boundaries around, how many nights a week would I go out? How many mornings a week would I do breakfasts or have to get up early? I'm not a morning person. So in winter, in summer, I do more morning things because living in Queensland, it's bright light at 4:30. I think I've been
and the birds are awake. It's not just the light. Yep. It's all the birds, isn't it?
And we sleep with our bedroom door. We've got a crimp-safe door on our bedroom, so we keep that open all night to get the breezes. And so so the sun comes streaming in and the birds start chirping, and I think I've been wide awake at 5 o'clock every morning for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change until about March. So, which means I need to be even more conscious of, what time do I go to bed? And so that's one of the things, that's one of the big things that I changed. And it didn't really impact very many other people. It just had a big impact on me. Other things that I do, I've got boundaries around how I work and when I work. And so think about, what does that look like for you? Are you working through lunch every day? Are you getting enough breaks and having enough rest during your working day? And by rest, I don't mean, are you having a nap every afternoon, which, you know, I'm totally here for, by the way. But how much time when you're in the office are you actually sitting down at a computer versus you know, walking around or on the phone or talking to people? Because when we sit for too long, our muscles start to atrophy, and that makes us feel worse, particularly as we get older. Yeah. So what does that look like for you? If you're working from home still, or even some days during the week, what's your routine and rhythm? Do you wake up and check your computer the minute you're up, or do you have a morning routine that involves, you know, spending time with the other people in your family at home, or doing some exercise, or having a healthy breakfast, or reflecting, or reading a book, or, you know, doing something else as a part of your morning routine that doesn't involve falling out of bed, sitting down, turning on the computer and looking at your emails?
No, the morning, and the event I was at this morning, we talked about a morning commitment or a morning ritual, and affirmations is another thing to add into that, isn't it? A morning ritual. What do you want your day to look like?
That's you
can control that, by the way. If you didn't know you could control it, you can control it, and it's all to do with your attitude towards the day.
It is. And not only what do you want your day to look like, but how do you want to feel at the end of the day? Do you want to feel exhausted and frustrated and like you've not done anything? Or do you want to feel strong and accomplished and proud of the work that you've done? And again, you've got total control over that.
Yeah. I'm the opposite. You know, I taught aerobics for 10 years and I only did one 6 a.m. class in all that time because I was not a morning person at all, never. And then I think it was having children. It shifted. And now I'm very, very blessed. I sleep very well. So the moment I go to sleep, I then wake up the next day. And I'm early riser anyway, you know, I'm awake. And for me, that first 2 hours in the morning, I can get more done then than I can, you know, do through the afternoon where I'll go for a walk instead. So it's finding that rhythm for yourself, isn't it, too? What works absolutely for you? Because I went to a networking event here at 7:30 this morning. I'd got up and done my stretches and, you know, got ready to go out. But I'd also then spent, you know, nearly 2 hours, over 2 hours doing my marketing, answering emails, and I was, right, now I'm out. It was, there's less commitment and less hassle for things I've got to get done.
And that's so important, that comment of you need to find your own rhythm and what works for you, because I'm not a morning person and I know that my most focused time to get work done is between 3 and 6 in the afternoon.
Right.
And that's when my brain really kicks in and I'm really good at focusing. It's like the caffeine of the morning has finally, it's taking action.
Good. We're recording this at the right time of day.
We are. But I also know that mornings for me are really good times to do the busy work and, you know, the 5-minute jobs and to make phone calls and to, you know, do things that don't require the deep work and the deep focus. And so it's taken me a long time to realize that. But I also know that, you know, if I sit down at my desk before 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm not usually going to get very much done. So it's taken a long time for me to figure that out.
and for everyone figuring out really what works for you. But taking lunch break, I know even when I was in that senior management role and the days were just sort of coming at you, I took lunch. I made sure that I worked away from the desk. Yeah. And what I did on really stressful days, I was working, it was in the suburbs, so it was a bit difficult here in the city, although you still walk out the door. I would get in the car and I would drive to one of the local parks and sit under a tree and eat my lunch. And it was just half an hour, but it would take me out of that environment totally and de-stress, or, you know, just be part of nature. I'm an earth sign and very grounded person, so going and doing that is really important for me as well. But it was, and I now, even when I'm working from home, I will always stop for lunch. I always do it. And I remember through COVID when we were all working from home, that was such an important part of the day, was then to go and sit outside, eat my lunch. And I think I read and listened to about 30 books during that 3-month period.
Nice.
A bit of an overkill with the books, but because you're just sitting there and you're reading, that would be, and they're all fiction.
Yeah.
I didn't need to learn any more things. Yeah. You know? I just wanted to have fun with it. Yeah.
I'm the same. I take a lunch break every day. I always have. And I nearly always read while I'm having lunch, especially if I'm home alone. Sean does a bit of shift work. And so some days, and he works, he'll often have a day off during the week. And so then we'll have lunch together. But I always take a break because I really notice the impact of not taking a break when I try to work in the afternoon. And I think the other thing we need to think about with boundaries as well is, when do we say yes and when do we say no to things that we're asked to do? Do we say yes to everything because we feel we should? And so often as women, we believe that we don't want to be seen as the mean person who says no, or we don't want that guilt from saying no. But work out, you know, what's important to you? What can you say no to? And why do you say yes and why do you say no to things? And the same with people. What limits do you need to be setting around difficult people in your world?
Yes, I know a lot of the women who listen to this do work from home, and that's one of the things they often tell me is setting boundaries. Yeah. That no, I'm not home, I'm at work.
Yeah,
people just popping in because, or you know, other family members expecting them to do things as if they were at home as opposed to in the workplace.
It took me a long time to educate my mother that working from home meant I was working.
Yeah.
And she'd say, but you're at home. And I'd say, yeah, but I'm working. Focus on the working part of it.
Yeah.
Not the home part of it. And, you know, even Sean, sometimes he'll say, oh, today, can you do all these jobs? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I might be able to take the washing outside if, you know, I think about it. But that's not my priority for the day. My priority is my job,
yes.
Not doing housework.
So how do you communicate all of that if you're, you know, well, at home and your mother and your husband, or if you're in the workplace and there's expectations from management or colleagues or from staff?
With my mother, I just stopped answering the phone when she rang during the day.
Yeah.
And that got around that.
Avoidance. Okay.
But,
avoidance.
I beg your pardon?
Avoidance.
Yeah, yeah. But that was because, but we also had some long conversations about it. And I just said, look, I'm not available. Pretend I'm in an office, which I am in an office. It's just in my house.
Yeah.
And with Sean, you know, he just tries it on. And I just say, no, forget it. I'm not doing it. Or he'll come home and he'll say, have you done whatever? And I'm like, well, no, I haven't, because I didn't even think to, because it's not on my radar. And I did work out of a co-working space for a while. And so I couldn't do any of those jobs around the house, and that was fantastic. But I think when you're an employee, it's much more difficult. It can be much more difficult to set boundaries and limits in the workplace, particularly if you don't have the confidence to stand up for yourself, and you don't have the skills to speak assertively and to communicate assertively. But I think when it comes to setting boundaries, the key part of having them honoured by other people is that you need to be communicating them with clarity and with compassion and with consistency. And it's there's no point in setting a boundary if you don't tell anybody what it is. So one of the things that I'm pretty strict about is I don't have meetings before 10 o'clock in the morning, and I don't usually answer my phone before 9:30. In fact, my phone goes into do not disturb mode at 9 o'clock at night, every night, and it doesn't come out of it until 8 o'clock the next morning. And sometimes I'll, you know, manually adjust it, but it also, like, I'm very, and it's on silent most of the time. Okay. Because if I'm answering the phone, it needs to be at a time that works for me. And I tell my clients that all the time. As soon as I get a new client, we have a conversation around what are our communication preferences. And one of the things I always say is, please don't leave me a voicemail, because I don't listen to them. If send me a text and I can respond to that really quickly. Even if I'm in a meeting, I can quickly respond to a text, but I can't return a phone call or listen to a voicemail if I'm in another meeting. And I also say I'd very rarely answer the phone before 9:30. When daylight savings is happening in the rest of the country, then I'm a bit more flexible with that. Because I have clients, you know, around the country, but they all know that. And to the point of my clients will leave me messages and say, oh, sorry, I missed you. I'll call you tomorrow after 9:30. And they all know.
Yeah.
And they all know why as well. And because I say to them, I have a morning routine that takes a couple of hours. I don't get up usually before 7:30. And that morning routine usually looks like going to the beach, having a walk, having a coffee, maybe having a swim.
Yeah.
And I don't get home before 9 o'clock. So, and you can call me and I can try and have a conversation with you, but it will be noisy and I won't be focused on you.
Yeah.
So no, let's make it a time that works better.
And that's the important factor, isn't it? What boundaries do you want to set? I remember I was listening to one manager, and he had a toy or something at the door. And if the toy was at the door, then anyone could come in. It was an open door policy. But if the toy wasn't at the door, then it meant that he was not to be disturbed, or something to that effect. And it was, and it worked really well for him to do that. Everyone started to learn that they'd be walking past and go, oh, no, and they detour and come back when the toy was there.
Near American writer Nir Eyal, he wrote a book called Indistractable, and he talks about how do you get focused work done and avoid distractions. And he said, if you're working in an office environment, then you need to have some kind of a cue to let people know that please don't interrupt me because I'm doing deep focused work. Mm-hmm. And if you buy the hard copy of his book, it has this it has a cardboard crown at the end of it that you can cut out and put on your head as the symbol that you're working and don't disturb you.
Right.
But, okay. You know, there's other ways you could do that. You could put a sign on the back of your chair. You could wear a red shirt. You could, if you're in an office with a door, then you can close it or put a sign on the door. My staff used to do post-it notes on my door with smiley, with emoticons, a smiley face, a cranky face, and an ambivalent face. And if it had the cranky face, then they all knew, don't come in.
Oh, that's good. Here, the only one that would disturb me is my husband. He's retired, but he's not really retired, so he's rarely here. And I just close my door. And he's aware that it's although he does really naughty things when I'm doing recordings, and that I've got two windows in my room, one to my side and one in front of me, and he'll stand at the window and pull faces while I'm trying to be sensible.
Oh, that's so good.
A Zoom call or a coaching call, and I usually dob him in.
Sean's known for walking in when I'm on a Zoom and giving me a kiss if he's walking in the door or walking out of the door, if he's like coming or going from the house. And he loves the attention that it gets.
Yeah.
And so I have to say to him, like for this call, because he's just come home, I texted him and said, don't interrupt me.
It's being
I'll
recorded.
Come up when I'm ready.
Oh, that's cool. One of the things I wanted to ask is, so we're talking about it. What actually stops people from setting those boundaries?
Oh, so many things. Lack of confidence, not wanting to feel like, you know, the guilt from saying no or setting limits, not knowing how to have hard conversations that sometimes ensue when you do set boundaries for the first time. And I also think that a lot of people don't even know that they're a thing. A lot of people don't even realize that they've got control over their lives and that they can set healthy boundaries, because they either haven't grown up in an environment with people role modeling that behavior, or they have just so used to the status quo and they're so exhausted and overwhelmed and overworked that they, it's just too hard.
You find men can set boundaries easier than women?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, I have two grown sons, you know, they're adult males, and they just really do what they want.
Yeah.
You know, they've got huge responsibilities in their workplaces, but they're much better at, no, I've set that time for that. Or, and I know when I had reps working for me, they would ask for the things they wanted.
Mm. Yeah.
It was a really different space than
One of the things that I say to a lot of particularly younger women I mentor is, when you're starting a new job, start that job with the behaviors that you would like to continue. So in your first week of a job, ask for what you want. Take a lunch break. Start on time, finish on time. Don't do unpaid overtime. Make sure if you're a people pleaser and if you're wanting to make a big impression, put a social activity on after work every single night in that first week, so you have to leave at the time that you should be leaving.
Yeah.
And then people will see that that's how you behave and they won't question it.
And that's interesting. And that's, well, I used to actually have something on every single night when I was in that role anyway. It was always, it have to, but I always left on time or near time. Mm. But because I'm a morning person, I turn up work early. And I spoke to a friend about this today, who is a real people pleaser, And I rang her at 7:30 on my way out, and she was already at work. And I said, "Oh, you're there early." And she said, "Oh, I get here at 6:30." And she does ask for advice. So I mentor a fair bit with setting boundaries. And she said, "No, this is for me because I personally need to know I finished the job well." And I've got, okay, that's a very different space then for her, because it's that self, she'd be judging herself and if she hadn't finished the job that needed to be finished. So it wasn't necessarily for them, it was for her. So there was a bit of a different sort of ownership in that, and a very different sense and feeling to it for her.
Yeah, there is, but that sounds to me like there's a bit of perfectionism in there as well.
Gosh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And so that's not helpful for anybody in the long run, because when you have that sense of perfectionism, you're far more likely to put other people's needs ahead of your own.
Yes, and that's what she does a lot, unfortunately. It's I won't go any more on that, but that's exactly what she does. Now, we could talk for hours.
We could.
We definitely
could. We could.
It's three takeaway points I always ask my guests to provide. What would be the three things that after the conversation that we've had, you say, this is the most important things to take away?
Oh, look, the first thing I always say is if you haven't been to the doctors for a year or longer, get a checkup. Find out just get that confirmation that all the bits in your body are working the way they're supposed to. Yeah. Because sometimes things go wrong and you don't find out until it's too late. So get all that checked. The second thing is do something every day that you love. Pick that one thing that just brings you absolute joy and do it every day, or at least, you know, prioritize it and do it as many days a week as you can. And think about it before you go to bed at night, so you're going to sleep with something to look forward to the next day.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is have a good look at where the areas of your life that aren't serving you at the moment, and have a good hard think about, honest think with yourself, which, yes, that's not easy, about what you could change and where you might need to put a boundary in place.
Yes, that's really important. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about your second point there. One of the things, as I mentioned, I love listening to fiction books. Mm-hmm. So I build that into, I can only listen to it when I'm in the car or when I'm walking.
Oh.
Yeah, that means that, I'll go for a walk now because I want to listen to my book. It's one of my motivational factors, but it's something that I really love doing. And I've always liked walking, but you can get a bit lazy with that.
I always read for half an hour, or sometimes a bit less, sometimes a bit more, when I go to bed at night. Mm-hmm. And it's nearly always fiction as well.
Nice. And I think when we're dealing with so much real stuff with business through the day, it's nice to be able to switch off with that. How can people get in touch with you, Mel?
Oh, my God, speaking of things out the window, there's an enormous bush turkey that's just flown up onto the fence that's about a metre and a half away from where I'm sitting, luckily on the other side of the window.
How cool. Not a kangaroo on the roof, though. Did you see that one the other day?
No, I didn't.
Kangaroo on someone's roof.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Where can people get in touch with me?
Yeah.
My website, melkettle.com, has all of my details. Mm-hmm. And if you are wanting to find out more about boundaries, I do have a short course on boundaries called Your Boundaries Blueprint. So there's information about that on my website as well.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's very relevant. Thank you very much for that. And I love the conversation. As I said, we could talk for hours on this. It's such an important topic. No matter who you are, what you're doing, and in what situation you are, setting those boundaries and recognizing that you are creating the life that you want to create with the values that, and really being happy within the values that you have, because around the life, I think that's such an important factor.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
for having me on.
You're welcome. Very welcome. And that's another episode of another interview with our beautiful guests on the We Are Women podcast. Stumbling over my words. I'm just thinking about the stuff Mel's been saying, and I'm already processing it and adapting some of those things. which is important because it's one thing to listen to things, but then there's also taking action makes a difference. Remember, you can book a free strategy call for JeaneBosper.com. Share anything that you've learned and share the podcast with everyone that you think will find value from it. And I look forward to you being with us next time as I talk to somebody else that's going to offer some amazing stories. I think the stories have more impact as well, but the advice, and for those that have been listening for the last 150 something episodes, you know what I'm talking about, and not rambling long like I am now. Have a great day or week or month or wherever you are in the world. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Jeanine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.